Do you remember your first job?
My first job was as a paper girl, which I guess means that my first job was working for Fairfax. I was about 14 at the time, and I'd never really done a paper run before, so I used to deliver these papers in this old pram, which was like a bassinet on wheels with a hood. I didn't really have any other transportation options, so that's what I did. My first day, it was summer, school holidays, you know, December, and I was delivering the papers. I came back home and my family just laughed at me. And I looked in the mirror and my face was completely covered in black marks. I'd been sweating so much through my paper run that I'd been wiping my face. The ink from the newspapers ended up on my hands and then on my face. Not the best thing to do on your first day at work. But 6 months later, I had enough cash to buy my first acoustic guitar, which was my prized possession at that point. And I still have that guitar. So it was worth it in the end.
That was Tegan Nichols, one of our producers and editors. We also asked Britta Jorgensen, one of our supervising producers, about a job that's a bit harder than the one she has at All The Best.
All I wanted to do when I was like 14 was have a job and my own money. So I remember like calling up all these places and asking if I could work there, and then like finding an ad in the newspaper to work at McDonald's. I worked there for 3 months, I think, and one day I was like doing an 8-hour shift, and I was like on the fries the whole time, and it was like super hot, and like I hadn't eaten, and I kept asking for a break. I'd been working, I think, 7.5 hours without a break. And I was like, look, I just like really need to take a break. And I just felt super sick. And I had like never fainted before in my life, but I felt like my whole vision disappearing. I had to like run to the bathroom, like sit on a toilet just to stop myself from fainting. And then I like came back and got yelled at by the boss being like, where have you been? And I was like, I haven't had a break. I feel really sick. And they were kind of like, yeah, you can just like go home now if you want. And I think they were worried about like getting in trouble. And then I just called up and quit and never went back.
Our social media producer, Matilda Fay, asked her nan about her previous work experience.
I was 16 and a half when I had my first job. I wanted to join the land army, growing vegetables and things like that to feed the troops. When I turned 17, I could have, but my father wouldn't sign the papers for me to do it. I didn't want to work in a factory, so I was lucky enough to get a job as a florist. I was a leading florist in Sydney and was called Beatrice Stewart. Some orchids fell off a plant and I put them in my bag and took them home because I hadn't seen orchids before.
You're listening to All The Best. I'm Samantha Groth. On this episode, we're here to work. Sarah is also here to work. She came from Belgium to Australia on a working holiday visa. When she arrived in Australia, she was introduced to the thriving world of underpaid, cash-in-hand jobs. Sarah opened up to Angela Moran about her eventful attempts to earn a crust.
Okay. So I start?
Yes, go.
So my first dirty job was in a store in the city. And I found it because I was in Australia for 2 days and I met a Dutch girl who was working in a dirty place and she was looking for another job and she told me, oh, I can advise you to the store if you want. But I warn you because they pay very badly. It's like $13 an hour in cash. They lied to her because they said it would be 18 and then she was paid 13 and she didn't dare to say, oh, you owe me 18. So I went there, I made a tryout for 2 hours and they never paid me my tryout. And then they don't really call me back, but they say, yeah, it's 13 because we don't have a lot of customers. So that was my first experience in Australia with job.
That's my friend, Sarah. Before I met Sarah, I had no idea there was such a seedy online underbelly of cash-in-hand jobs with terrible pay in Melbourne. She's here from Belgium on a working holiday visa, and she's racked up quite a lot of good stories during her first month of looking for a part-time job. Lucky she's got a good sense of humour. We met up in a cafe, which actually turned out to be quite a good idea just between you and me, but more on that later. We met up so she could show me how to spot a terrible job opportunity on the web.
All right, let's look online. So, Melbourne.
Can I write it?
Yes. All right, so this is where, this is how, exactly how you were searching when you found this wonderful job.
So you, but what you, like when it's like that without any majuscule, you can see, less there is majuscule, more dodgy it is.
What do you mean majuscule?
So like at the beginning of all the word, big letters. Capital letters. If there is no capital letter, it's dodgy. Just remind.
Oh, this isn't real, but that's dodgy for sure. Part-time online jobs.
So also other common rules. If there is capital letters at every word, it's also dodgy. So it must have a balance of capital letters.
I should say at this point that, to be fair, there are some good jobs with decent pay to be found online as well. But it seems it's kind of hard to tell which is which. They can be very alluring.
For the kitchen head job, but you can also find for the marketing sales job. That's the best because they sell you dream and then you just help.
But Sarah's marketing dream was very short-lived indeed.
The next trial to have a job was the collective job interview for a marketing sales door-to-door job. But I never really say that it's door-to-door, actually. You apply online, you send your CV. I don't think they really read your CV. And then they call you and ask you some question like, why would we hire you? And you say what they want to hear, like, I love customer and I have a lot of experience in services, even if it's not true. And then you have a job interview with 6 people. And there is this guy who speaks like Steve Jobs. And he's really well done because you really believe in it.
But what the motivational speeches often hide are the downsides to the job, like the fact that they don't pay for time travelled between suburbs when you're door knocking, and actually charge a higher fee for that iPad you have to lug everywhere. And with many of these jobs, you don't actually earn unless you make sales.
Yeah, they explain you that you are paid on commission and more you sell your crap, more you have money. But I wasn't, they didn't call me back because I think I wasn't serious enough.
While some street marketing jobs only pay commission, there is the chance of moving up the ranks and making good money if you work hard at the start. But working long hours without much pay isn't feasible for everyone. If you don't have much experience or many connections, like a lot of young people, it seems there are plenty of employers, especially in the hospitality industry, who feel they can take advantage by offering unpaid trials and paying way below minimum wage.
So I come back to Gumtree, of course, after all these nice experiences. So I applied, and I think I was the first one, so I get the job. And he said, okay, first we are going to have a trial for 3 hours. And I had to clean all the cafe, and it wasn't been cleaned for, I think, like a few years. And so I did it the best I can, like, because I wanted to be hired. And then he said, yeah, come back. It was like Friday, and he said, yeah, come back on Monday. We will talk about the wage. Like, it's a bad start.
The manager offered Sarah $33 per 3-hour shift. Yep, $11 an hour. And said it was her who should in fact be paying him, as he could teach her new skills, like how to cook and make coffee.
I feel like, oh, okay, that's dodgy. But I don't have anything else to do, so I can have a try to see if it's worth it. So basically I think, okay, if there is no customer, because there is never one person in this dodgy coffee, maybe he will have the time to teach me something. So the third day I came back and he was alone in his coffee and said, okay, we are waiting for a customer and don't teach me anything. So I said, oh, sorry, I waste my time. I will keep this job. And he was like, okay. Wash your glasses. And I said, no, you didn't pay my trial. You will never pay me. I don't wash my glasses. And I said, goodbye. Good luck to find another people. Well, poor guy.
So we've heard about some dodgy employers, but sometimes employees can be a bit on the nose too. I mean, who hasn't stretched the truth on their CV when it comes to experience in a certain field? to any potential employers. I would never do that, by the way. Back in the cafe with Sarah, I thought I'd get an expert opinion on this from someone in the hospitality industry.
Can I ask you a question? So, what would you say if somebody came in for a trial as a barista and they'd never made a coffee before, but they were pretending that they...
We would know within the first 2 minutes. We would actually know within the first... Yeah, within the first couple of minutes.
Yeah, you'd think it would be pretty obvious. So who would do that, right?
Third experience. It was a chain store in the city, and I asked the general manager to have another trial. And he asked me, oh, do you have skill in coffee making? Yeah, of course I don't. I've never done a coffee in my life. And I said, yeah, I did in Belgium, but I lost my hand a little bit. But I think in a few hours I can be operational. And he said, okay, let's have a try. You have a trial like tomorrow with some people. So I went. And I freaked out. So it was really the first coffee in my life. The day before, I watched a YouTube video to how to use a coffee machine. And I pretend to be really good at what I was doing. So the girl said, okay, make me a coffee. And it was a little bit embarrassing because I wasn't very sure with the machine and the button and stuff like that. And I did really whatever with the milk. I tried to have a little shape, but it was nothing.
One of the waitresses tried Sarah's coffee and didn't seem too impressed. But Sarah must be a pretty good actor because the girl who was running the trial actually said she could tell she knew what she was doing with the machine, but that she was just too slow.
But at least I tried. So I'm not a barista. I thought it was just push on buttons, but it's not. Well, it is actually.
Sarah then went on to make a very powerful enemy by insulting her local barista.
I asked the barista, do you need staff in the coffee? And he said, are you a barista? And I said, no, but I can, it just push on button. And this guy was so offended because it's like a kind of hipster with a long beard and the big glasses. And he's been doing that for years. And coffee is very like holy. And I just say, no, it just push on button. So he was, I think, quite offended. And he said, no, if we are really desperate, we need a person with 3 years of experience. Otherwise, it's 5 year experience. And I said, okay, I will never come back. So that was my experience with coffee making. But at least I tried. I'm happy to have done that. So, now I know that it's more difficult than I thought.
But little did we know, Sarah was about to get a bit more experience.
Is that your friend?
Yeah.
Has she made a coffee before?
During this trial, when she pretended that she made a coffee.
All right, well, we'll bring her over. We'll see if she can do it.
I'll just ask her first, okay?
Yeah, I reckon she'll come over.
I'll ask her.
Yeah, go ask her. Yep. So, did she get the job?
No, she didn't. They said, this is my friend, this
Hi.
Is...
Hi, how are you?
So yes, you hear about my happy experience.
So when you went for your trial, did they ask you, do you know how to do a magic, a doppio, one macchiato, short mac, a mocha? Do you know how to do those?
It's just to push on different buttons.
But this hasn't got any buttons.
this is
a different machine.
Another machine, because there is no button. It's the first
one. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to get you to do the milk.
That's the most difficult part, to pour the milk.
Well, at the moment, you've got the difficult part, all right?
Okay.
All right. So, see this?
Yeah.
Okay, that's off. That's on.
Okay.
All right, off you go.
Like that. I don't know when to stop.
Okay, stop. So what you want to do, you want to hold the jug.
Ah, okay.
Because that way you know
So there you go. The friendly guy even said she could come back and he'd teach her the basics. I think he admired her audacity. And although she didn't get a job there, she was successful in finding one eventually.
Finally, I got a job. That's a good point of this podcast. And great fun in perspective. A lot of story to tell after.
So Sarah joins the thousands of workers, past and present, in Melbourne with stories to tell about dodgy employment. And while she ended up finding a decent job, there are still so many who are not being paid fairly. Let's hope the new laws proposed to target these issues see a fairer future for everyone involved. In the meantime, we can be grateful that Sarah didn't get a job as a barista and won't be inflicting her coffees on anyone anytime soon.
That story was produced by Angela Moran, with help from supervising producers Nina Enova and Beck Fari. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Groth. All the Best is a show for new and emerging audio documentary makers to pitch, produce, and learn. If you pitch an awesome story idea to us, we'll also pair you with a supervising producer. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. We'd love to hear from you and then put you to work. Would you like to learn teamwork skills, how to deal with conflict and be calm under pressure? Hospitality has everything you need in a fun and fast-paced environment.
Working in hospitality, it's all about the people you meet. My fellow waiters on the restaurant floor, the chefs dishing up in the kitchen, and the patrons. You get to know a lot about your regulars. You learn their names and their orders, but sometimes you also unwillingly learn their secrets. When I used to wait tables, I remember feeling like I was on a soap opera, watching people's lives play out one meal at a time. And I saw a lot of things, but one memory stands out. A peculiar businessman would come in for lunch, on weekdays for drinks with a young lady, on the weekends with his wife and kids. All the staff knew what was going on, and he knew we knew what was going on. But we kept silent because that was our job. What was going through this guy's head? Why couldn't he eat somewhere else with his wife and kids? Was our food really that good? I don't know. Today, we're delving into the life of a hospitality worker. Erin McConkie is a waitress whose artistic talents were inspired by her customers. By day, she waits tables, and by night, she's a writer and comic artist. As you'll hear, working in the hospitality industry is a lot more than just serving smashed avo on toast. Customers are justifiably picky when it comes to dining out, and not every experience will match their expectations, but sometimes you get those customers who are, well, plain rude. You know, the customer who makes unreasonable requests, or who click their fingers to get your attention, or the customer who 10 minutes after ordering asks what's taking so long. They only ordered a steak well done. It can be the little things that build up and slowly chip away at you. The tipping point for Erin came after a long day of serving, but instead of letting the customers know how she was feeling, she found a better way to express her frustrations. She picked up a pen and began drawing.
I remember exactly when I started doing it. It was when I was working at Archie's all day on Gertrude Street, and I just remember walking past these two customers, and one of them said, "I'm already onto my second coffee today." And her friend was like, "Oh, you don't want to be bouncing off the walls." And I just remember thinking, like, oh my God, the amount of times I hear that in a day is just phenomenal. So I was just thinking about all the things that you do here every day and how it can be really frustrating, or customers might make the same joke over and over again, or you might get ignored in the same sort of way. And yeah, it does take its toll after a while, even though it's just little tiny things during the day. You sort of, you can either get really frustrated or you can just ignore it. And so I just started drawing them just to sort of make them a bit more tangible and just to sort of be able to laugh at it instead of get annoyed by what customers were doing or saying all the time.
What started out as a way for Erin to vent about work soon turned into something far bigger. Erin created a Facebook page which has grown into a community of thousands. The page, That's So Hospo, is filled with hand-drawn stick figure comics that give some good insights into the life of a hospitality worker.
Do you have like a favorite piece of artwork that you've done or something that you think is your most telling piece?
The one that I did most recently, the one about when you're asleep and you're finished for the day and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you suddenly just have that jolt where you just wake up and you feel like you're falling with, there's just this feeling of dread because you've forgotten to put through someone's coffee at like 9 o'clock that morning. And you just suddenly realise and you wake up and you're like, damn it, I have to go back to sleep.
While social media can be a platform for greater connection, it's also created a space whereby the hospitality industry is under greater scrutiny. With social media watching and rating our every move through review sites that include Facebook, Google and Zomato, it's understandable that establishments are having to think twice about their interactions with customers. If you're a hospitality worker and you make a wrong move, you might just expect to see a scathing review pop up later that day.
People have very, very high expectations now. And, you know, you get people writing reviews like, you know, I liked the egg flavour of the omelette, or the cafe was too busy, or the waitresses set wasps on us. It's just ridiculous.
Wait. A customer actually left a review saying that you had set wasps on them?
Yeah, that was written about me and my friend. When we worked at this cafe, there were all these girls sitting out the front and it was wasp season. And there was this one customer who called me the wasp whisperer because I used to get plastic containers and like run outside and just catch as many wasps as I could in takeaway containers and then just hide them under the sink. So it's like this apartment block of wasp containers.
It's got like a wasp zoo or something.
Yeah. Once the dishy didn't know and he like went to open the containers, I'm like, no, stop, Toby. There's like wasps everywhere. But yeah, so out the front there were all these girls and there were just wasps everywhere and they were going for the pancetta and all the meat because they don't actually like honey, they just like the meat and the salt. And these girls were all screaming like, we need to move inside, and like, we can't find a table for you. They're like, oh, this is unbelievable. And then they just write this review, like just absolutely, yeah, just saying really horrible things about me and my friend because they were convinced that we were trying to get them killed by these wasps.
Expectations play a key role in any customer experience. Customers can expect their steak to be medium rare, their coffees to be hot, but not too hot, and they expect to be served with a smile. But what happens when you provide an exemplary service experience and the food is impeccable and served in a timely fashion? You've done everything to be at the table's beck and call and to provide them with everything and more. But then a review comes through that evening. 1 star. The restaurant was too busy. The age-old motto that the customer is always right does not always hold true. Sometimes everything is not enough.
Exactly. Or like, couldn't find a car park out the front. Or it was too windy. It's like, these are things that this venue can't help. Like, you don't have to write reviews and be Zomato famous, you know?
Over the years, I've come to learn that not all customers are the same. I found it can be helpful to think about the customer in terms of different coffee orders. You've got your flat white one sugar types. They're in and out before you know, and they're not looking to make any new friends. Then you've got your decaf soy lattes. They know what they like and sometimes require a little extra attention to keep them happy. And then you've got your strong almond milk 3/4 cappuccinos, extra hot with caramel drizzle. There is no reading these guys.
I do remember I had a really horrible customer who was just being very, very rude and swearing at me because he wanted waffles with maple syrup and we didn't have any maple syrup. We had like an orange marmalade maple syrup that was made on site.
Which is no surprise coming out of the alternative youthful suburb of Northcote.
And so we just had to go through this whole process of trying to explain this waffle situation and he just lost it. He absolutely snapped. And I had to go out the back and just sort of like calm down because I was just sort of, you know, blown away by how rude he was. And when I came back, he was standing at the door and he came up to me and he said, "Those waffles were terrible." I was like, "Okay." And he said, "By the way, when does the kitchen close?" And I said, "It closes at 4 o'clock." And he said, "Okay." And then he left and came back just before 4 o'clock and he ordered the waffles again and ate all of them and left and I couldn't believe it. And then on my last shift at that venue, it was very busy, it was Sunday, and this guy walks in, he's sort of looking around, picks up a menu, sort of wandering around aimlessly. I say, "Hey, how's it going?" It just looks really familiar. And he said, "Yeah, hey, I came into this place a while ago and you had these waffles." And I was like, "Oh my God, it's you."
The waffle man.
The waffle man. He's like, "Do you still have those waffles?" I'm like, "No, sorry, we've just changed the menu since then. Sorry." And he's like, "Damn it." And then walked off. I don't know. If people can just have a temper if they don't get what they want and then calm down and realize that it's not so bad after all. And then come back 2 years later and try and order the same thing.
After over 10 years of working in hospitality, Erin is now more empathetic towards customers. Accepting that you won't always see eye to eye with other people is part of the job, and that customer being rude or impatient might just be having a bad day. Erin acknowledges that even when she sees a customer doing something frustrating, she believes
they're not stupid. The customer's not an idiot. Sometimes they can be a bit obnoxious and not very nice, but it doesn't mean that they're stupid.
With all the negative things said about customers today, you might wonder why anyone would ever want to work in hospitality. The truth is, it can be a blast. You spend your days talking to interesting people, hanging out with the other employees, who might even become your best friends, and you learn a lot of invaluable skills.
It's been amazing working in hospitality just because it's helped me speak to people properly or just be able to have social interactions with a wide range of different people. And I've made pretty much all of my friends I've met through working in hospitality. It's a really good industry and I just think everyone should work in hospitality once in their life because then I think everyone would be a lot nicer to each other or a lot more understanding.
That story was by Lee Robinson. The supervising producer was Sarah Mashman. This episode of All the Best was compiled and mixed by Jess Meyer with Sarah O'Malley. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Jordan Fennell. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Victor Mims. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Matilda Fay is our Social Media Producer. And I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe and listen to us while you're at work. We won't tell your boss. While you're there, give us a review in your favourite podcast app.